Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program every Sunday from 7 a.m. and p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m., and we stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are also archived at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we also link to our guests, their website, to get you the information that you need so that you can move forward in your life and hopefully create a better world for yourself and your family and the folks around you. And I have to say that I had a little interesting experience just to share this with you before we get started with our special guest today here on the program. My folks who are, as I've shared many times, they're in their 80s. Matter of fact, my father will be 85 this year. And kicking, doing well, having a great time in his life. And both my mom and he are raising their great-grandchild, my great-niece. Kind of interesting to say that way. In any event, and they've actually shared with us something that a lot of folks don't think about, and that's the last will and testament. Now, you'd think that I never even thought about it in this context. They have individual ones, but they're pretty much identical. And it's really interesting to read through it and realize that everybody's accounted for, nobody's left behind, all is well. And you know what? From my perspective, and I think I've shared this before, even if I was, doesn't matter. It's all stuff. That's all. I've already received from them the greatest gifts over my lifetime that one could receive from his parents. And so I'm very grateful in that regard. And I was just thinking about that as I head towards the big 5-6 for me this month of June of 2016. And so it's interesting to start looking at these kinds of things. And I know that one day I may be taking a plane trip to Phoenix to share in the process of celebrating my parents' lives. May have to do it twice, and we'll see how all of that unfolds as the years go by. And interestingly enough, yes, I will keep you posted as long as we're doing this radio program. Our program today is actually going to be very interesting. I'm looking forward to this and talking with this lady, this woman who is, she's basically compiled a series of photographs and wonderful journal entries. Beneath the Chatter is the title, The Wise Self Awaits, and it is Tina Firewolf who is joining me on the program. Tina, thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Hey, Richard, thank you so much for having me.
This is a very, I mean, I love the photographs. It actually reminds me of a project that my wife is actually going to be working on, too, regarding photography. And of course, she'll be using digital. Are all of these digital film, digital images, or are some of these taken with actual film that you had to have processed?
They are all digital, and I don't edit my images in any way at all. So I spent 6 years making the book and chasing what I just call chasing the light. You know, I'm not the most skilled photographer in the world, but I am very patient and developed a very profound connection to the light, you know, presence, stillness, whatever you'd like to call it. So they are unedited, and I get them or I don't get them. That's kind of how I work.
Well, I'm kind of the same way. When my wife and I went to Ireland, we went twice. The first time we went with regular film cameras, those disposable types. Second time we went with digital. First time I had to process each one of them individually in Photoshop just because they were so washed out because of the gray skies and what have you. I mean, you're talking a disposable camera. You don't have all the wonderful little settings that you would on another camera.
Right.
So, but it's beautiful. It's a beautiful work. I like the way that it's presented. Slick paper, and of course the cover. Very, very beautiful imagery on both the front and the back. And yet at the same time, the contents, beside setting aside the photographs, which is kind of hard to do because every page has an image on it. It's helping each one of us in that regard. And of course, this is all your work. You didn't have, as you said, you took all of these pictures over 6 years, and these are your journal entries, as it were. And I'm quite taken by the title, of course, Beneath the Chatter, which seems to be going on for Well, all of us, most of the time.
Yeah, pretty much. If you're human, you have chatter. That's the way I see it.
But you also have some other projects and other things that are going on. I happen to see a few videos of you and these wonderful, I'll call them fire circles, these feral fire circles. And, of course, what little I know of the word feral, when I think of feral, I think of feral cats and dogs, which I interpret as wild and untamed and to the human person, unsafe. But when you are using that word in the context, especially of these wonderful fire circle ceremonies and experiences, there is a certain element of wildness to it, but it's not unsafe. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, I think what really started coming to me was that folks needed to know what was, and this is just my wording, but what was beyond the shaman, what was beyond the guru? You know, how did you really tap inside of yourself, down into your own wisdom? And for me, growing up on a farm, you know, I always tell people I grew up feral, and I had, you know, access to hundreds of acres to ride my horse on, and so I connected pretty deeply to myself and to what I call the great whatever. You can call it exactly whatever you'd like, to a presence. And that feral nature, that ability to really be free and yet grounded and in a balanced sort of way, you know, to really know yourself in the deepest way possible. And I find that, I call it your primal power or your primal nature. And so folks come to the fire circle in a very safe, controlled environment that is, you know, and I use controlled in the best sense possible. But it's a balanced, grounded environment where people can allow themselves out in a sense of finding their primal voice. What do they sound like from deep inside of themselves? What sounds would they like to make? Could the earth speak through them if they can get quiet enough and sink beneath their chatter? What would come up and through them? And what is their primal rhythm? And so we'll do drumming, and we do chanting. Sometimes people will get up and dance a little bit, you know, if they feel moved to move the body. So there's really no right or wrong way of being there. I have folks that come and enjoy just being quiet and sitting wrapped up in a blanket and partaking in the energy of that feralness, if you want to call it that. You know, that wild expression, yet knowing that they can be contained as well, because I think that's the balance that people are really kind of seeking. Is there's a lot of fear about allowing themselves out in a sense of being expressive, free. There's a fear, it seems to be, around being free, and they, you know, I bring in that essence of being contained, so that you can have that balance of being spirit and human and functioning, you know, in an everyday world. Because if you think of feral in the traditional sense, then you would think, you know, oh, okay, you can't function in a traditional sense. You're just literally out in the woods or something. But that's not the idea of that.
Well, I have to say that I've had the privilege of participating in some, in particular, Native American ceremonies and rituals over the years, coming from Phoenix and the Arizona area in the Southwest. And it's quite extraordinary. And yet at the same time, for me, I struggled with participating because I have such a... And maybe it's more than that, maybe it's even misplaced, a reverence and or respect for the rituals and the traditions that I don't want to violate anything. You know what I'm saying? It's like I don't want to cross any lines and create problems, whether they be physical, you know, in this world or karmic, if you know what I mean.
Right, right. Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. And I think reverence is very important, and I commend you for having that awareness of that. We, you know, we don't, I don't host my circles with any sort of path in mind. There isn't any ritual in mind. There's everything that we do is about connecting inside of the self. So, you know, there is no prescribed way of getting inside of yourself. I offer suggestions to folks at the circle, and I walk people and facilitate people inside of themselves through some meditation. I do a lot of toning and chanting, and the frequencies that come through me are offered as a reminder to the soul, to your soul, to, you know, oh, yes, this is what it feels like to be in the vibration of joy or celebration or love or whatever it is. So I'm not recreating any ritual. You know, I don't, that is not my intention at all. The fire, the earth, the elements, it's all here. We're all part of it. We're all one with it. I happen to just have a very clear memory of the fact that I'm one with everything. I've never strayed from that. I grew up very connected, and I'm just walking people back into their own wisdom and helping them remember.
Well, it is certainly something that we all need to reconnect with. Many, many folks on this program have talked about that aspect of reconnecting with nature as the key to reconnecting with self, that you need to get away from the technology and the busyness and, if you will, if I may coin a phrase here, get rid of the chatter beneath all of that stuff, to get to the core of who and what we really are and remember. And that's kind of hard. I know that there are children coming into this world who do remember, probably more than what maybe you and I remembered at their age, but they're holding on to those memories of the past lives or the past experience in spirit and so forth. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I think what folks need and are looking for is a direct experience of their self, of that higher self, of their expanded self, of their soul. I mean, whatever you want to call it, everybody seems to have an experience or a word, excuse me, to describe that experience that they're looking for. For me, I think if people knew the how, then they would be getting there. And so I work with folks on the how. And it's what I call the how of everyday enlightenment, because I believe it's very simple. I grew up extremely connected. I grew up knowing very clearly who I was and, you know, the fact that I was sort of a tiny little division of something quite grand. And that, you know, I think for me, I never needed to define my connection. I never needed to have a story about it. I never needed to have anything to follow other than the fact that I knew when I was in nature and I was very still that I just basically wasn't present there. My body, you know, I would lose track of that and I would just sort of be absorbed into everything and be really more connected into the energetics of everything going on, the light moving through the woods and whatnot. The kids that are, you know, I taught middle school science for 8 years and I saw a lot of different students over time and there are some students that are really coming in, very tapped in, if you want to call it that, with a very clear knowing of who they are. And, you know, and it was very, not all of them, but there were some, and it was thrilling teaching them and seeing the light and the brightness about who they are and their spirits being very free. And, you know, sometimes they say the most profound things, and it's always fun to have that reminder from outside of yourself, and it sort of puts you right back on track again. And so, yeah, you know, the way I see it is it's here for everybody. It's here in every single moment. You don't have to be anybody special to access it. You don't have to be born as a child now. You know, some of the kids are a little bit more, I guess if you want to call it awakened or whatever you want to call it. I think connected to themselves is how I like to see it. But that doesn't mean you can't get there if, you know, you're just kind of coming to this realization and coming out of being domesticated, as I call it.
Mm. Now, if I'm correct in what I've reviewed, you didn't come from a place of dysfunction and trauma and dis-ease and all of these things. You came from a place where you were a child who you relished in experiencing the natural world. I mean, this was where you experienced the things that you did that have brought you where you are today. So in a manner of speaking, you've come to this place in along, the only phrase I can think of is sort of along a rather clean path, which is absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how to gauge that. I think I just stayed beneath the radar, you know what I mean? Like, just my family was pretty dysfunctional in itself. I love you, Mom and Dad. But, you know, in their own ways, there was plenty of dysfunction.
Yeah.
Plenty of emotional abuse, and because people just did not know how to communicate. And so, you know, I grew up seeing the lack of love, but somehow I just hid in the woods. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was either in the woods or in the barn or with my horse or inside of myself. I just stayed sort of cocooned inside of myself.
Right.
And it really wasn't until my early 30s that I tell people, like, a switch flipped in my head, and that was when I started feeling that domestication or that conditioning coming on, and it was really clear, and there were lots of voices, and, you know, I mean, I became ill. I was teaching middle school for 8 years, and I had all sorts of completely bizarre illnesses, and I was, you know, in a marriage that really, it was like I married my brother, you know, I mean, it was kind of, it was like an adventure buddy, but there really wasn't any partnership there. And one day I was sleeping in my studio, a loft in my art studio, and I heard very clearly, "Wake up or you will get cancer." And, you know, I heard it so clearly that I sat straight up in bed and I said, you know, "Who said that?" Because, of course, I need to challenge the loud voice. And I heard it again, "Wake up or you will get cancer." And it was in that 8 year period that I say the dysfunction and the illness came for me. Up until that point, you're right. I grew up with my innocence intact inside of my heart, I guess, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
And during those 8 years of my wild awakening, I started writing the book. I started taking photos. Everything started falling apart. My health, every belief I had, every definition I had for life, you know, the definition of success and every other word in the human language just was getting defined, redefined by me. I became very aware of the chatter in my head. And it was really strong and extremely negative. And so that began my period of just being extremely tested and initiated through the dream time and just, you know, every crazy thing humanly imaginable could happen, did. And I talk a little bit about it in one of my writings in the book called Ancestral Connection,
mm-hmm.
where a friend of mine called me and asked me if I had a wood pile. And I said, you know, yeah, I have a wood pile. And she's like, "Well, I feel very guided to tell you to go and dig underneath your wood pile." And so I went out and started digging. And this was in California, so you know how hard the soil is up there in Northern California. And
yep.
I dug and dug and dug. And after several hours, I hit something. And I became like a squirrel attempting to unearth this cache of chocolate-covered nuts, you know. And I just started digging. And I found this 24-inch heart-shaped rock in the ground. And I heard, "Child, you are loved beyond measure." And I just started blubbering primal tears. I mean, just blubbering. And everything from childhood started opening up again. And, the next day I came out and there was a 3-foot-tall corn plant that had grown in my yard overnight. Now, every time I tell this story, people look at me like, yeah, right, you know. But I have a science degree, so, you know, I did go out and sort of check and see if somebody planted it and all sorts of other things. And sure enough, I mean, it was right there, right in the pathway from between me and my art studio. And so I walked and it hit me right in the like navel area. And I looked down and I thought, oh, I'm being summoned. And I knew that. I mean, it was like whatever I had lost and set aside during those 8 years, that connection from my youth, I needed to get it back and in a really fierce way, get reconnected to myself and get beneath the chatter. And so that started my wild awakening and the illness and all of that to get back into that innocence inside of my heart that luckily remained intact.
You know, as I flip through the chapters or sections, however you want to phrase it, the headings, they're all interconnected. They're all interrelated because of the things that you're talking about. As a matter of fact, I'm actually looking at page 68 of the Ancestral
Good.
Connection.
Okay.
Is that the rock, the actual rock that you dug up?
That is not the actual rock.
Okay.
That is another story. I was hiking when I was writing this book, and that is a heart-shaped rock there on page 68, but I was hiking, and I was taking pictures that day in the Smoky Mountain area here in western North Carolina, and I was walking down the trail thinking to myself, like, why am I doing this? This is a waste of my time. How am I ever going to write this book? You know,
yeah.
All the chatter. I mean, the chatter was just incessant. You know, you're not going to make any money at this, like, blah, 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 blah. Mm. And then I stubbed my toe on that rock that's in the picture there, and I just started crying again. It was just right in the middle of the trail. I mean, it was just right there. And I thought, oh, boy, you know, I'm on the right path. Keep going, you know. And the funniest thing is I remember I just left it there, and I hiked on, and when I came back, it was completely gone. And there wasn't anybody around that day. It was the middle of the week. I was in the middle of nowhere, and it just disappeared. And I thought, okay, I know I saw that rock.
Hmm.
So, yeah, there's quite a connection there. Not the same rock, but also the same sort of concept, just reminding me, you know, I'm loved. I was on the right path, and I needed to keep going inside myself to find that fire again, my own, what I call my own unique fire.
I like the quote on the other side. It's our greatest ache to reconnect to the wisdom of love that is within us, to our own unique fire. And, of course, the photograph above is a silhouette of a cornfield and what I'm familiar with, of course, coming from Arizona, the orange on fire skies at dusk and sometimes at sunrise. That one will see. The beautiful, beautiful imagery. The book is entitled Beneath the Chatter, The Wise Self Awaits. It is a contemplative photography companion for the journey home. And my guest is Tina Firewolf. And we're going to come back when we continue our program. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We're talking with Tina Firewolf and discussing a lot of different subjects, including the latest work that she has released, Beneath the Chatter, The Wise Self Awaits. And I find that to be quite profound because, I don't know, Tina, I came across a wonderful poem that was written by an author by the name of Tiberius. First name escapes me, but the general premise of it is that the gods were fearful that man was going to figure out the secret of how to become like them, and that is how it's phrased, like them. So they began to discuss, where are we going to hide this secret? And they discussed out in the universe, in the stars, oh, no, they'll find a way to get out there. High atop a mountain, well, they'll figure that out. In the depths of the ocean, no, they'll figure that out. And they went through 6 or 7 or 8 different possibilities until one piped in and said, I know, we'll hide it in his heart. He'll never look there.
Wow, that's perfect.
And
it's so true.
Yeah, and this wisdom, if you will, the, as you say in the subtitle, the wise self awaits. That part of us, and I think I could even use the word innocence. I'm watching this one television series, and I'm very fortunate that it's only 6 parts. I actually have enjoyed finding these wonderful British television shows on on-demand television that are 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 episodes long, and then it ends. It concludes. It finishes. Unlike in the United States, they just want it to go on, and it's like you keep repeating the same premises over and over and over again. But I'm watching this one having to do with this one man who travels back to November of 1963, supposedly to stop the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And I'm thinking, who's the lunatic that thought that that was a good premise for a television series? It happened. But it was said that, this is going to my point, it was at that moment and in that decade that we, the people, we lost our innocence. Are you kind of telling us, and again, not from necessarily that point of view per se, but are you kind of telling us as individuals that we can get that innocence? Not so much that we lost in the 60s, but that we lost as we were growing up through the trauma and the dysfunction and the dis-ease and all of those things that happened, that we can get that back?
You know, it's never, in my experience, right, because I can only talk about my experience, it's all that I know, it's never gone, Richard. It's just there. It's literally waiting. And when I discovered that it was right there, I had many, many multiple sort of rediscoveries that it was right there. It was like every time I'd rediscover that it was right there, I would have to, I don't know, I would forget somehow. And I would be commandeered by fear, I think is the best way of putting it. And commandeered by fear. And then I would forget. I would forget that the innocence was right there. Because in my experience, my chatter, my mind, my ego, whatever you would like to call it, didn't want me to remember. And so I was in a full-on lockdown, drag-out battle with my chatter to get literally beneath of it so that I could come from that centered place of love or innocence with every single thing I do. And once I got beneath the chatter enough, now people say, oh, you don't have chatter anymore? And no, I never said that. I interface with it very differently. And most often it is quite quiet. It has bowed down, so to speak. But it's, you know, it rears its head on occasion, and I have to stay commanding of my ship, so to speak. But it's always there. It's always there, no matter what has happened to you, no matter what, you know, you're experiencing in life. It's there in every ordinary moment, that stillness, that presence, that innocence, that just shatters your heart and drops you to your knees. It's there. Whether you're brushing your teeth, combing your hair, filling up your fuel tank, it's really about bringing yourself as fully present. This is what I discovered anyway. Bringing yourself as fully present into the present moment as you can be, and then there it is, suddenly. It could be just with the light, the way the light's coming in through the window. Or, you know, I remember the day I reached into the dryer and I was pulling clothes out of the dryer and everything slowed down so much that I could smell and feel and everything in such a heightened state. And I looked at my feet and I remember I had socks on and I realized the innocence or God or however you like to interface with that word, it was right there, as close to me as the socks on my feet. And I just started cracking up laughing. That is how close the innocence is in our everyday existence. It's in us. It's buried. It might be buried, and we get to excavate it. And we can do that in a whole myriad of ways. I mean, people, there's all sorts of things to be involved in, you know, whether it's a feral fire drum circle or a massage or acupuncture or singing in the choir at church or, you know, whatever, cutting the grass, working on your car, whatever things really bring you back into that place so you can excavate yourself and remember.
Yeah, it's, and I have to say, I'm very fortunate that I have the privilege of living where I do, not necessarily and specifically Santa Barbara, but actually in the mountains above Santa Barbara in county area. And it's very rural. And we have had the experience of having, I guess it's referred to as a flock of turkeys that would roam the landscape when we first moved there. And we've had the sightings of a bear. I actually have pictures of that bear up on my website. We've seen a myriad of different animals. My wife saw a very large buck racing across the base of the hillside behind our house. Now, that hillside is only about 6 feet from the back of our house. That's how close that buck was.
Wow, wonderful.
But we've also had, we had chickens. We've had chickens that we used to, that we've had. We're thinking about resurrecting that whole process, but only maybe one or two just for a few eggs. We were doing it, and we had so many eggs, we were selling them, which was fun. But it's just great to be, and then these giant oak trees that have survived for decades, you know, and again, I don't know how long an oak tree lives. And then the grasses that come up following the rains that we've had here. And just all of the different attributes of the natural world in which we live and are around. And then when the storms roll through and the winds are blowing through the trees and all of these different aspects. And sometimes I feel when those are happening, and we're living on the side of this hill, I feel so small. So small and insignificant, if you will, you know, not unimportant, but it's like in the vastness of the universe, or even just the vastness of the earth. Here we are in this tiny little thing, you know, and yet here we are. And we're amongst all these creatures and there's no fear. I mean, I still remember the experience with the bear. I came across the bear. He was eating loquats or plums off of a plum tree. And I walked, I was walking parallel to him, and I heard this noise, and I stopped, and he stood up, looked at me, and just went back to the plum tree. I went, did my business. I went back the other way, and, you know, and, I mean, it was amazing that.
It sounds fabulous.
Yeah. But a lot of people think they can't do that because of where they are. Are there ways to do that, to make that happen for oneself?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I call it everyday enlightenment. You know, I mean, people look at how I grew up and they think, oh, yeah, right, I don't have that. Or there's actually a lot of folks that have a lot of fear. I take people out into the woods from time to time because some folks really want deep time in the woods and they want me to help facilitate that space of them dropping into themselves further. And so I'll take folks out into some sacred places here where I feel called to go. And I've noticed that people have fear around nature, and that's okay. If nature isn't how you connect, because I've had people say to me, you know, nature just doesn't do it for me. I don't feel connected there. And that's very, while that is very hard for me to understand, I have had folks tell me, you know, in the energy medicine and self-leadership sessions that I do, you know, I had one gentlemen say, you know, this might sound silly, but I feel really connected when I'm playing video games. Mm. And I said, so play more video games. You know, it's really about, from my experience, it's about whatever activity can keep you in the present moment drops you literally beneath the mind's chatter so that you can be fully present and experiencing yourself in an expanded state. So you can even get this from washing dishes. Now, you know, some people might be going, really? I hate washing dishes. Well, if you tune in, and it's really just about observing and becoming observant. I have a science background, and so I really like chatting with people about making observations and, you know, diving. I think the trick is that people don't understand how to go inside themselves.
Yes.
But if you're washing dishes and you notice, maybe the first thing you notice is the sound of the water running. And then you notice, you say, okay, I noticed the sound of the water running. And then you notice, oh, it's actually louder on the left side of my body than it is on the right side of my body. Mm. And so you just start noticing things one layer at a time deeper. And then you might notice perhaps the steam coming up at your face out of the sink, and that it's warm, and that as you inhale that, you become one layer deeper inside of yourself. And then you might notice the temperature of the water. You might notice the bubbles on your skin. And it's just taking you deeper and deeper into that moment that is unfolding. By simply noticing one thing at a time that is unfolding in that experience that you're having, even if it is washing dishes, even if it is brushing your teeth. And that's why I call it Everyday Enlightenment, because I don't have time. I meditate a lot, but I do it throughout the day. Mm-hmm. I practice while I'm brushing my teeth. I practice while I'm drying my hair. And it's by simply focusing on what is really happening as intensely as I can focus on it in that present moment, even if I am brushing my hair or tying my shoes. Or I try not to do it when I'm driving my car, but you know, I do use it throughout the day. And that, you know, so if you're sitting on a park bench, feel the sun on your face. Is it warmer on the left side or the right side? Is it really bright in your eyes, or is there a shadow? Do you see any colors in your eyes when your eyes are closed? You know, is the sun on your eyelids making a color form? And is there a breeze? Is your hair moving? Is it not moving? Do you feel the wind up inside of your nose? Is it in your ears, or is it just across your face? Is it blowing across your face evenly? And you just bring yourself into the present moment like that.
There's a wonderful saint, Teresa of Avila, who is quoted as saying that God is among the pots and the pans. And
I did not know she said that. That's fun.
Yeah. And I have to say that I have I have literally a daily ritual that gets shifted back on the weekends. But for the most part, every morning when I get up, I am usually awakened by our animals. And the first thing that I have to do is I have to let the dogs out in the backyard while I prepare their food. I bring them back in, and then we have one kitten where actually she's a full-grown cat, but she's like miniature, and she loves this powdered mix. It's usually used for weaning a kitten from mama, but she loves it, and she gets the nutrition that she needs from it, so I will then fix that for her, and then I'll do the dishes, and then I'll go around and I'll clean the cat boxes. And that ends the ritual until I go in and start getting ready for work. And I find an incompleteness, especially during the week, if I don't do it in that particular order. And again, it's not like, oh, you failed. No, it's like, there's this wonderful progression, and that I'm meeting the needs of these creatures. And I'm caring for them. And then, of course, when I hit the dishes and the suds and kind of like what you just spoke of, and I'm looking out the window. We have this big old pyracantha bush that's covering this giant picture window, looking out onto the area and see the sky, and then there's this bird that comes up that taps on the window every morning. I kid you not. Now we have a mirrored screening on the windows to help cut down on the glare, but obviously it's because this bird sees another bird. But this whole experience for me has developed over the last literally few months. And it's been just extraordinary. And if I miss, even on the weekends, if I miss that Saturday morning because I want to sleep in and then my wife gets up, she does the things that she does, or a Sunday morning, same thing, I feel like I've missed something. I've missed out. I've missed out on something. Not that I've neglected my obligations. No. I've missed out on something. And I think that's really kind of what you're talking about, like when you talk about doing all of this in the context of the daily activities that you described.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. I'm glad that you have found something that keeps you, you know, feeling that connection. And it can, and I encourage you, and I invite you to think about, you know, what can you pay attention to at a deeper level? The next time you're opening, I don't know if you use like canned food or whatever for your animals, but can you feel the tab pull up? Can you hear the sound it makes as you pull the metal back? Can you feel that like suction that happens when you take that wet food out of the can? Like if you use that, what things can you dive into a little bit further to pay attention to at a just a little bit deeper level and see, you know, if that interests you, to see how that might then invite you into something even even more, you know, even more, just a little bit more present.
Yeah.
I you know, one of my, part of my mission anyway is to ignite people, but with, and empower them with self-leadership tools. And I call it debunking this spirituality myth that I see kind of floating around. I think there's a lot of folks that really need to know that enlightenment is for everyone, and it is in every ordinary moment, and that it can be easy and as simple as feeding your cat, or you know, picking your kids up from school, or going to the grocery store, or any of the other myriad of things that we have to do each day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and. I don't know if this necessarily applies, but there's the phrase that comes to my mind as you describe this, and that's being mindful. I know there's all kinds of mindful this and mindful that, just like not long ago, everything was quantum. now everything's mindful, which is all, you know, I just thought that was kind of funny when I observed that a few years ago. But it is being more mindful. Or I suppose maybe the more accurate phrase, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, is being more spiritually connected. I was going to say more spiritual, but more spiritually connected or inwardly connected to what you're doing and how you're experiencing it and so forth. The observer.
Right. And, you know, I feel like that there's a real, I meet a lot of folks. I meet folks of all ages and traditions. I really enjoy working with a wide variety of people. And there seems to be a sector of people who, you know, they feel like maybe they're missing it, or there's something wrong with them, or they're just not getting it,
yeah.
Or, you know, they're not a part of it, whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
I get this a lot from folks, and they'll say to me, oh, well, I wish I had a more spiritual life, or I wish I were more like you, and all this kind of stuff. And I tell them, you know, it really can be as simple. You don't even have to put any definitions to it. You don't have to read a book. You don't have to prescribe to a religion if you don't want to. You don't have to read science or do the mindfulness things or meditating. I had somebody say to me the other day, you know, Tina, I'm so afraid that I'm meditating wrong. And I was like, oh, well, this is very interesting. You know, it can be as simple as slowing down. It can be as simple as watching and I know this isn't a new concept, mm-hmm. but what is new is the level at which one needs to slow down to. There is a speed of love that unfolds on the planet that I have found anyway by spending time out in the desert. And, you know, the desert has a way of making you slow down.
Oh, yeah.
It forces you. Mm-hmm. It's hot. It's hot beyond measure. Everything's pretty much ready to kill you if you bump into it. And God help you if you do bump into it, you know, because then you get to slow down and start plucking spines out of your leg.
Mm-hmm.
And that really slows you down, you know. And so, I mean, I have had all these sorts of experiences of being profoundly humbled to slow down to a speed where I began to experience the particles of nature, the actual literal particles of light, the particles of the leaf, everything. When you really start attuning yourself to that depth of speed, which is quite slow, it's really that simple.
It really is. And I of course, I grew up in Phoenix and around the deserts, and some friends of mine and I used to go hiking in the early 90s. I had this men's group, and there were only three of us for the whole time. There were only three of us, but it was a great time. And we would go out into the mountains with Superstitions or Mountains to the West, or we went up to Seven Springs once. That was interesting because we said, we'll take a half-day hike. Little did I know that was literal. We left at we started the hike at 10 a.m. and we didn't get out of the mountains until 10 p.m. I didn't.
Wow.
I thought we were going to be out of there before sunset, but you know, the universe had other plans. It was really quite an extraordinary experience, but it does. And I remember once hiking through, and I needed something to lean against at that, and I wasn't even aware of my surroundings, so I saw something to my left, and I put my left hand up on there, and I used it to brace myself, and I walked around, and I took my hand off, and my hand was fine, and I looked up, and I had just used a saguaro cactus to brace myself as I walked around it. But I didn't get any spines, any needles in my hand, which was really interesting. No punctures. So I thought that was real interesting. And I also had an experience where I call it disassembling a saguaro. And of course, the only way you can do that is if it has fallen. And we'd had some rainstorms the weeks before, and this one had fallen over. So we were taking the ribs out. I have this beautiful saguaro rib hiking stick. Anyway, we were walking around, and there was this outcropping of rocks, and I was starting to walk towards it, and I was going to actually walk around it, and all of a sudden, I heard this rattle, and I knew what that sound was. I also knew exactly what to do, and that was to back away because I was encroaching on the territory of another critter, a rattlesnake. But, I mean, these experiences, they slow you down, whether it's the heat or sometimes if you are mindful in this context. The experiences that you're having, if you're mindful enough, if you're aware enough, if you're open enough, you will slow yourself down so that you can experience them to a greater degree.
Absolutely. It could be your grandchild's birthday party. You know, they're getting ready to blow out the cake, you know, and you're just really focusing on the flame and the movement of the flame and the candles and, you know, the joy on their face. And, you know, it's really just about stepping outside of the mind and all the thinking that is going on. You know, it's about learning to observe, but you're not judging. The mind judges. And I don't mean judging, you know, judging someone in a negative way. That's not what I'm talking about. When we observe, we judge. Oh, that's purple. Oh, it looks like a dark purple. Blah, 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 blah. And we start really judging. And it's beautiful. It has a place. It's just not in, you know, it's not helpful if we're trying to slow down and be silent. I want to commend you for having a men's group. And I think three is a beautiful number. And there's a sensitivity that comes with what I have found anyway, there's a sensitivity that starts to become heightened when we do slow down and keep looking at these simple moments. And so I love that you had a men's group, because I work with men a lot, and they often will say, you know, if we're doing some self-leadership work or energy work, and they're feeling that softer side of them, which is really just a sensitive part, I like to remind people of the samurais. You know, they would be sent into the woods for 3 years to develop their sensitivity, to develop that sensitive nature, to perceiving in a heightened manner.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of men steer clear from a lot of what we're talking about, because they think the word sensitive is equating to being weak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I find it actually takes great strength to slow down to the speed that we're discussing. Because, you know, it might be a simple concept, but in my experience, there was nothing easy about getting beneath my chatter.
Now, I was going to say, I don't know about you, but only because, okay, most women are, their emotions are a whole lot closer to the surface. But I've noticed just in the last, I'm going to say in the last year, that my emotions, and I have actually been mindful, unfortunately, to the point of ego getting in the way of not allowing that those emotions to quite come to the surface. I've been watching, I've been rewatching programs that I was fascinated by, and then I'm watching them again with obviously new life experiences in between. And I see the same scenes, only now it evokes, tears, getting choked up a little bit. I mean, even as a kid watching Little House on the Prairie, I would cry, sitting there amongst the family. I would sit there and get all choked up. I mean, not necessarily bawling, but, you'd sit there quietly and lump in your throat and, your eyes get all misty. But, you weren't going to show anybody that you were, moved by it. But I never really thought of it as necessarily, a bad thing. I thought, well, that was the whole intent, wasn't it? I mean, they were supposed to make it a moving experience, that kind of thing. And even as I'm watching our animals play, I mean, we have a beautiful black King Shepherd. His name is Angus, 3 years old. And I love watching him run. And it's just incredible. And he runs like a horse. I kid you not. He runs like you would watch a horse running in the gallop. But the other day we were watching him and we're out there playing with him, kicking the ball around and he's chasing it. All of the sudden he is, and I'm not even sure what the word is. He's leaping front paws together and then back paws together, back and forth, so that at every instant or so, he is literally airborne. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fun.
And I'm going, I've never seen him do that before. And it was so extraordinary. But watching our animals, all of them, the cats and the dogs and so forth, there is some emotion that comes up when I'm watching them and thinking, God, incredible what they've brought into our lives. Talk to us a little bit about, if you would, the relationship from your observation and your experiences that animals play, both feral, both wild, as well as the domesticated that we bring in or that come into our lives.
Yeah, animals are special. I just recently had a little experience with a field mouse. And, field mice are different than your typical rodent, mouse. Not that they're less important. Everything's important. But a field mouse, they're very clean. They're very tidy. Of course, they're adorable. They've got big ears, little white feet. And there was this little baby that I don't know where its parents were, but I ended up trying to raise this little baby mouse, and it unfortunately didn't make it. It was very, very tiny. Its little eyes weren't even open yet, but it had fur and everything, and it was eating for me. I was using a little milk mixture and using an eyedropper and whatnot. But it was fascinating to watch this little guy clean his whiskers and touch his hair. I mean, he was always cleaning his little face. After I met him, he started to clean his little whiskers and clean his face. And you know, the just the absolute joy this little guy brought me. And I built this little tiny nest to live in and to try to keep him warm. And, you know, I only managed to keep him alive for a few days, and then he passed away, which, you know, he would have done anyway in nature. But I couldn't just see something struggling, you know, laying there struggling. I had to at least try to be of some sort of support or comfort. Mm-hmm. And I think that they bring us to that point. You know, they could bring us to our knees, and they could help us feel emotion, which you were just talking about, you know, looking at Angus and seeing the joy as he ran, and mm-hmm. and allowing the flow of emotion through our body, which to me is what I think a lot of people are experiencing, this disconnect, because they are not connecting to the full spectrum of emotions that we are meant to contain. Not just the joy and the pleasant stuff that mm-hmm. we like to talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody wants to walk around admitting that they lie, or they are judgmental, or they can get very angry, or they can be depressed, or, you know, in my book, I'm very, very honest. It's a very raw look at my process, because I feel that when we allow ourselves that full flow of emotion and fully embrace and accept and welcome in our humanness, including our ego, our beautiful, beautiful ego that is just doing its very best every day to stay alive and help us stay alive. It's really about finding balance between the two. You know, we don't want to let it run our ship, but really welcoming all of it in. And then the animals come into our life on top of that to help us feel everything. You know, I mean, I don't know about you, but I've had animals my whole life. I have raised many things that were, you know, pretty much on their deathbed. The last bigger thing I raised was one of my dad's baby calves. And, you know, he's like, oh, it's going to die. And I said, Dad, well, we've got to at least try. So I was doing some energy work on it, and I would sing to it every day. And, you know, and eventually it started bottle feeding, and eventually it started jumping and playing. And, I mean, I just, the absolute joy that creature brought me. It would let me lay in the fields with it and sleep with it. You know, I would curl up with the little baby calf in the sun, and I would pet it, and it would lick me. I mean, this little guy, I don't think he really knew he was a cow. And a lot of times there are certain animals, it's not every animal, but I can communicate to animals and I can hear them. And he really didn't know he was a little cow. And I put a little halter on him, and we taught him how to walk with me. And so he would be very calm and, you know, grow up calm instead of aggressive. And I think the animals are there to give us all these experiences. I know a lot of people love their cats and dogs, and but, you know, I ask us to branch out into the mice, into the insects, into, mm-hmm. you know, all the different animals that are around us, and we can show kindness and tenderness, and they can show us back that same kindness and tenderness and that joy. And like with Angus, it can also be a focus tool for us to find our, I guess if you want to call them, meditative moments.
Yeah. It's also one of those things too, where in the case of Angus, that we've gotten into the habits, i.e. schedule. We get home, we get ourselves situated, and of course we bring the dogs in to say hello and welcome home, thanks for coming home and everything. And I'll usually put their food out at that point. And this is within the first 30 minutes all this is happening. And checking on everybody, making sure everybody's okay. But as soon as it reaches the half-hour mark, he knows, or he is going to tell us, it is time to go outside and play. And he's jumping around. And of course, as soon as my wife starts putting her boots on to go out into the backyard, he goes nuts. He just he can't contain the energy, the joy, the excitement, the exuberance.
And that's awesome.
Yeah. And so I have to literally lock myself in my studio to get ready. Otherwise, I might get injured by his exuberance, you know. But anyway, we go out, and at first he races for his ball, and he, you know, and away we go. So it's quite an experience to watch him, and it is quite a joy. All of our animals, regardless of how they may behave, they all bring us great joy. When we had the chickens, I loved going into the run on this little, sitting on this little stool. They jump up on my knee. I was like, wow, okay, sure, you know.
There's something really special about an animal trusting you like that. You know, there's something very special about when animals come to us, like the chicken jumping on your leg, or, you know, whatever it is, little mouse allowing me to hold it and try to help it, and the calf letting me lay with it in the field, my horse used to let me curl up in her belly and fall asleep. And there's something so, she was an amazing animal. Yeah.
Oh.
She was an incredible animal. And I rode her bareback my whole youth, the whole time I had her, and she grew old, you know, old with me and passed away, but she was a very, very special animal, and she would let me curl up inside of her legs and just sleep. And when she was ready to get up, she nudged me with her nose, and I knew it was time to wake up. And I spent a lot of time sleeping in the fields that way. And there's something very, very lovely about when animals allow us into their space like that.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's a bird feeder, you know, maybe you live in a city or something, and all you can have is a bird feeder or a fish tank or something like that. But there's something special when they connect with us.
Yeah. You know how when you tell a kid, especially if it's one of your own, all right, playtime's over, it's time to go to bed. Oh, come on, another five minutes. Well, I was out playing with Angus the other day, and basically to get them to go inside, you know, well, play with him for a while and get him panting really good. All right, ready to go inside? Go inside? Well, this time he just stood there looking at me like, no, I'm not ready to go. Okay? I'm still playing. I don't know about you, but I'm still playing. So we played, you know, we played for a little while longer and, of course, went inside. Well, the night before, we played really, really hard in the yard. I hadn't even gotten to the point where I was ready to say, okay, ready to go inside. And he came over to me without a ball in his mouth, and he leaned into me. Basically, he has to say, okay, let's go inside. I'm done. and it was the first time I thought, I'm never going to reach the point where I'm going to exhaust him. Well, the other night was the night. And it was really, really, really very interesting that he was telling me, you want to go inside? Because I'm ready.
Oh,
so it was,
that's sweet.
It was really something. You know, this is fascinating. You know, and in spite of the fact that beneath the chatter, the wise self awaits, you know, it's both, I'm sure it's available in the digital format as well as the hard copy, which I'm holding in my hand here. You have managed to, I think, through this work, you have managed to intertwine the natural, and how can I put it, the natural and the modern, can I put it that way? The modern world, to put it in a kind context. Matter of fact, I just flipped open the book as I'm looking at it, page 52, this beautiful, beautiful waterfall with the rainbow. Oh, it's incredible. Surprised Light is the title of this particular page. But you've managed to bridge it from my perspective. This is my observation. You've bridged those two.
Yeah, this is in Yosemite in California, that picture. And I'll never forget that day because it was really, really hot. And it was what I would consider oppressive dry heat. But although now that I'm back east, it's also a moist, oppressive heat. But that day I was taking pictures and I was really excited about the waterfall. And to see water flowing. And, you know, usually I would be really tuned in to what was occurring. And that day, I didn't even see the waterfall. I mean, the rainbow, until I got back to the car. And I looked at my camera and I thought, oh my gosh, there was a rainbow? And that's when I wrote this piece that, you know, that the rumination that my mind was doing, the tale of woe about how hot it was that day, took me out of the present moment so far that I hadn't even seen the rainbow. And so, you know, then I started questioning, was I even experiencing life to its fullest at all? Because, you know, my head would just commandeer me. It would just take me away. But I was pretty shaken by this photograph, because that was a real clincher when I realized that I was really missing out on the love that was just wafting in the air. And I wasn't paying attention.
Well, I commend you. I think this is a wonderful piece of art, among other things, a wonderful little book. And I encourage people to pick up a copy of Beneath the Chatter, The Wise Self Awaits. Tina Firewolf is my guest. And Tina, I'd like to thank you for sharing this time with us. I have a few more questions for you before we wrap up the program, but I really appreciate it. And should you find yourself out west once again here in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue the conversation.
Fun. I would love it. And you never know. I'm always moving around. So.
Before we wrap up the program, three final questions for you. And again, thank you for joining us. And the first question is, who is Tina Firewolf?
I'm just me. I am just me. I am a very ordinary person who absolutely loves being outside. And I am very, very dedicated to assisting people and empowering them to remember. I just want people to know that they're who they've been looking for. They're perfect in every sense. And if I can assist them in learning techniques to love themselves and to understand how to navigate their humanness, then I welcome that opportunity. I'd be honored to assist them in any way.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Oh, to bring back love. To bring back love, the love of God, if you want to call it God, the love of all creativity, the love of ourself, the love of our mind, of our ego. I love my ego. My poor ego does its very best every day. And, you know, there's so many people that are just beating themselves up and hiding parts of who they are because they are, quote, ashamed. And they live in isolation because they think they're supposed to be some specific way. And if I can debunk every myth there is on spirituality, I would love to do that. Of course, I consider them myths, and other people might not. And that's okay, too. Mm-hmm. I'm looking to really continue to practice in every moment, which is what I do. I practice letting go of the need to be right. I practice, I mean, I see that in myself. I see that in others. I practice being the bridge to bridge people into conversation that is challenging, especially around God. I'm finding it very interesting. You know, if I love saying that word, it's like saying sex, and everybody goes, oh my God, you know, they said I'm straight, they're sweet. it's just so funny when I do that. And just really working with folks to desensitize us from the belief that, you know, we all have a different way of being. We all have a different way of perceiving. This has just been my experience. You know, I'm looking to start offering what I call sacred sight sound healings and working with people. I'd really love to interface with the church and utilize some of these amazing sacred sites to bring the tones that come through me and do some sound healing and allow myself to tone in these places and at the same time empower other people to tap into their own sound. I just want us to get past that point of needing an intermediary. I'm not saying get rid of the intermediary. I'm just saying, you know, maybe balance it out a little bit. You don't actually have to have one. You really can access yourself. And here's the big thing I tell people, and people always tease me because they're like, that is so simple, is to ask. To ask yourself, to get to know yourself, to build that relationship with yourself by asking questions of yourself, by asking to participate in nature. When I go out in the woods, I ask to know the wind. I ask to know the sun. I ask for the water to play with me. And this is not from any past. This is not from a Native American perspective. It's nothing. It's just an asking. It's a reverent asking from your heart to want to know and build that relationship.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Oh, to ignite everyday enlightenment. Absolutely. Absolutely. In every single way humanly possible that I can, whether it's through my artwork, through the singing that I do, the toning and the chanting, through the drum circles, through people seeing me roll down a hill in the grass. You know, I mean, because I am a very playful person, I often can get people playing pretty easily. Absolutely, just being a joyful, joyful human being and helping people remember that life can be joyful. Even the lessons that we learn, and believe me, I've been bashed and learned plenty over time. So it's not that I'm not always a positive person. I just happen to love it, even if I'm negative and crabby and nasty. I have the ability to love myself and be pretty real with myself, and I want other people to do the same.
Well, Tina Firewolf, I thank you again for joining us on the program and to our listeners. If you would like to hear the entire interview that you will only hear a portion of on the radio version of this, then go to richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and click on Tina Firewolf, and you'll be able to also go to her website and listen to this entire interview, and we encourage you to do that. We spoke for over an hour, and I thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much, Richard, and thanks for everybody out there listening, and I'm always happy to chat and connect. You can find me on Facebook or my website at tinafirewolf.com.
Wonderful. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.